This is The Full Story. I'm Tom Kooser. The Republican Party during the Trump administration went through a significant transformation on a national level. For example, its stance on free trade, national defense, the traditional hard line on what was the Soviet Union, now Russia, the path to immigration reform, to name just some of those changes. And while that presidency is over, some still refer to the GOP as the party of Trump. So where does the GOP go from here? The party of Lincoln, Reagan, small government and big tax cuts appears to be having an identity crisis. And today we'll find out how that crisis is playing out in our region. And let's start by getting a journalist's view, two journalists, actually, who keep their eyes on local political trends. From Long Island, we have Joe Shaw via Zoom, the executive editor of the Express Newspaper Group. Joe, welcome back to The Full Story.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be here.
And from Connecticut, WSHU's senior political reporter, Ebong Odama. Hello, Ebong.
Hi, Tom. How are you? Hi, Joe.
Good to see you.
Joe Shaw, let's start with you. Despite what happened nationally, Republicans on Long Island had a very strong election night last November. The anticipated blue wave, so to speak, really did not sweep through Suffolk and Nassau counties. What happened?
Yeah, it was interesting, and I can speak to Suffolk County. Donald Trump actually basically drew with Joe Biden in Suffolk County. Trump won by 200 votes, which is something like three one-hundredths of a percentage point. At the same time, the Republican candidate in the first district, Lee Zeldin, won fairly comfortably. He won 55% to 45%. And I think it was a good night for Republicans in general. You know, Suffolk County is deeply divided and has been for a long time. It's almost evenly split between Democrats and Republicans. I think it's fair to say that the Democrats have an edge at the county level. It's a fairly substantial edge, but you've got to factor into any election here the blanks and no affiliation registrations. They make up almost an equal number to the Democrats and Republicans in Suffolk County, and especially on the South Fork and the East End of the island. The blanks and no affiliations are sort of the moderates, I believe, and they tend to be the swing votes that matter the most. And I think they stay focused on the local candidates in the local races. And I do think there's a lot of cross-party voting. People vote for people for local races, and they look less at the party. But the Democrats are definitely gaining ground in the county, and they're gaining ground even faster on the East End and on the South Fork.
Now, you mentioned on the county level, but when we take a look at the state level, and I think Suffolk County is unique in New York State. It has four state senators, all Republicans, and most of its assembly seats are in GOP hands currently. That's a pretty strong hold, it seems, on the East End for the Republicans. Or did this momentum get ramped up during the Trump era?
You know, I think the Trump era had some effect, but it's an interesting phenomenon because I think the region in general tends to, when you look at locals, people who have grew up here and have been here, I think there's a heavier Republican population, you know, throughout our region in that regard. But it's a region that's had a lot of influx of people from New York City who tend to be Democrats. And we've certainly seen that in the last year in even greater numbers. And I think the presidential election last year had a lot to do with it as well. But I mean, when you look at registration numbers, the Democrats gained so much more quickly. In the county, they had about three times the number of new registrations than the Republicans did. In East Hampton Town and Southampton Town, it was an even bigger margin. I think it was 10-1 in East Hampton Town, new Democrats over Republicans, and 70% of the new voters in Southampton Town were Democrats. So, you know, Southampton Town was a Republican stronghold for a long time. In 2017, it flipped for the first time in memory to becoming a a town that had more Democrats than Republicans. But again, it's those blanks and no affiliations and independence party can registered voters who I think you have to keep an eye on too, because they really make up the difference. They decide most of the races.
During this period of time that you're talking about, and even going back, let's say, the past 4 years, has there been a change then in the rhetoric or the messaging on the issues that are important to the GOP?
Well, I think Lee Zeldin obviously is an extremely pro-Trump figure at the national level, and he's enjoyed a comfortable re-election. The last election he won, I think it was 10 percentage points. It was 55 to 45, I believe it was the final vote just in the fall. So I think you have to remember the first district stretches into some very heavily Republican parts of Suffolk County. Out here, I think the problems with the Republicans' messaging and focusing more on divisive things has taken a bit of a toll in the region. And I think people here still look for individual candidates who they speak to the local issues in a way that where they're actually bringing solutions to some of these problems. And I think that some of the rhetoric that's more general and more divisive doesn't really work. And I think that's hurt the Republican Party locally. We actually have an editorial this week talking about the fact that in East Hampton Town in particular, they've struggled to put together challenging slates for town government in East Hampton Town. And a one-party rule is never healthy, and we need a healthy Republican Party. And I think the problem has been that some of the local leaders in East Hampton Town's Republican Party have sort of embraced a lot of that rhetoric, and I think it's turned off a lot of voters. And I think you're seeing that in the change in the registration and the fact that the Democrats are gaining ground in registration in East Hampton Town.
Well, Republicans in Connecticut did not fare well locally in the last election. In fact, Connecticut now has a state government, I guess you could call it a Democratic trifecta. Democrats have a majority in the state Senate. They have a majority in the state house. The governor, Ned Lamont, a Democrat. Eb Ongudama, WSHU's political reporter, senior political reporter, with us as well today. Are Connecticut Republicans, Eb Ong, regrouping and re-strategizing for the next election?
I don't think they have a choice but to regroup and re-strategize. Apart from not having control of any of the branches of state government, they've also seen an exodus of people from their party. Thousands of people have changed their party affiliation, especially after the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol in Washington. And shortly after that, they also lost their party chair, J.R. Romano. He stepped down and said it was best for him to leave a bit earlier than he had expected to leave. He had already said that this would be his last term, which would end this spring, but he decided to leave a bit early. So there's an acting chair right now who's going to try and keep the party together until they can have an election in the spring. So they've had a rough time. A few weeks ago, there was a special election to fill a Senate seat that was vacant in Stamford, and the Democrats won that. So they lost that opportunity to pick up a seat. It's going to be interesting to see how they try and consolidate and how they can get a different message out from what's coming from Washington right now. I think that's what's hurting the Connecticut Republican Party more than anything else. They've always had, for statewide races, especially for the governor's race, it's always been close in Connecticut. And right now, looking forward after the way Governor Ned Lamont has dealt with the crisis that we've had over the past year with COVID, his popularity has actually gone up. Before that, popularity rating for Lamont was in the 30s, but now it's much higher than that. And it seems to be getting even better as he's trying to open up the state now. And the way he's handled the rollout for the vaccine has also been very popular.
From what you've seen in your reporting then, is the Republican Party in Connecticut pulling things together, so to speak? Are they getting organized in a fashion that will give them a real run at some election opportunities in 2022? Or is it closer to a situation of chaos or something in between?
Well, basically, the party's on hold right now. And I think we will have a better picture of what the future of the party will be when they have the election for the party chair in a couple of months. In late May, June, I think they're going to have that. And we'll have a better idea of how they want to move forward. Because last year, it seemed as if there was an opportunity for Republicans to make some gains. And the headwinds from Washington, I think, is what really affected the Connecticut Republican Party. Although they did pick up a few seats in the House, but they lost seats in the Senate. And they haven't been able to pick up anything since in any of the special elections that have come after that.
Joe Shaw, your publication, The Southampton Press, printed an editorial in January that denounced Congressman Elise Zeldin, the Republican who represents the 1st District on Long Island in the U.S. House, as, quote, unfit for office, that followed his address on the House floor that amplified misinformation that was spread in advance of the attack on the U.S. Capitol. In your reporting on local Republicans, and we've touched on this a bit already, have you found that Lee Zeldin is the face of the Long Island GOP right now?
I think that's fair. I think he's very popular. And the thing about Lee Zeldin that it's important to keep in mind is, and we've made this point, I believe we may have made this point in that same editorial, in many ways, he's represented the district very well. He's been a good local representative on a lot of key issues. And I think he has good constituent service. He's out there in front of a lot of local and regional issues that matter to our voters. There's no question. It's in that regard, I think he's been a real good congressman. And I think that's one of the reasons he won re-election so easily. And he's a very difficult guy for the Democrats to challenge. But I do think this, you know, the events of January 6th were historic, and I think there are lines drawn from that. And I think not only did Representative Zeldin take the wrong position, I think he was one of the most visible people out there who chose to still move forward with a lot of misinformation on the House floor immediately after the events of January 6th, which is just troubling to us and troubling to a lot of voters in the 1st district. To be perfectly blunt, I'm not sure it will cost him re-election, although now he's looking at a potential run for governor, which I think that's a tough hill to climb for a Republican, especially a pro-Trump Republican in New York State. Whereas I think in Suffolk County, where his district is, there is a sizable pro-Trump population. And I think that Lee Zeldin probably has the job in the House for as long as he wants it, or at least until the Democrats can come up with a strong candidate to challenge him. So he's among the most, I think he's sort of the banner, he's carrying the banner for the party right now. And he's doing it, you know, by the Trump playbook. I think a lot of us on the outside who are not pro-Trump would say that's a dead end. And I think it helps him in the short term, but I'm not sure in the long term that's going to be the way for the party or the way for the representative to go forward. But I think he's pushed his chips in, and I think he's committed to that. So I think he and the party are going in that direction, whether it's the right direction or not.
Since you mentioned the word governor, I can't let you go without asking you something about what's happening in Albany right now and how people in Suffolk County are reacting to that, how Republicans are reacting to the scandals involving Governor Cuomo, the problems with reporting on nursing home deaths connected to COVID-19, and with the allegations of sexual harassment by several women. What in your reporting have you found in Suffolk County? What are Republicans saying about that and about the governor and about a future gubernatorial candidate?
You know, so much of the partisanship that existed prior to the scandals just carried over. I think a lot of the Republicans and Lee Zeldin, well before he announced any interest in considering a run to challenge for the governor's office, has been openly critical of Andrew Cuomo throughout the pandemic. I mean, he's been willing to say some pretty negative things about the governor's response. He was among the early people to really raise a big hue and cry about the nursing home statistics, which is a legitimate issue that is worth a, you know, needs to be explored and is being explored. But he's followed through with that criticism pretty heavily. And I think that's been the focus for most of the Republicans. And what's more interesting is, I think, how local Democrats are taking it. And they are split, as are so many people throughout the state, between people who believe he should step down, and there has been a call for him to resign from some folks in those corners. Some are saying, wait for the investigation before we decide. And then there are others who are very defensive of the governor, especially because of his leadership through the crisis. So I think in a lot of ways, Suffolk County just sort of mirrors the rest of the nation or the rest of the state. Actually, it's more of a national conversation at this point, too. And I don't think there's anything too unique about how it's playing out locally. It's pretty much cut along the same lines here.
Ebong, as we look to the future of the GOP in Connecticut, you mentioned before that the former chair of the Connecticut Party, Republican Party, J.R. Romano has stepped aside, and a new person, Sue Hatfield, has been selected to serve out Mr. Romano's term. Is her selection, from what you've seen in your reporting, is that a sign of where the party wants to go next?
It's hard to tell, because unlike what's happening in on Long Island, where Lee Zeldin is like the face of the Republican Party, we don't have a face, we don't have a personality that the party is rallying around in Connecticut right now. And it's going to take a while for that to happen, because we have a gubernatorial election coming up next year, and you're going to have a lot of people contending for to represent the Republican Party in that race. So it looks like further division of the party. And we've had that tension between the pro-Trumpers and the never-Trumpers in Connecticut in the past 4 years. And I don't know how much what happened on January 6th is going to affect the party going forward, but we can already see signs that, you know, more than 5,000 people have changed party affiliation in Connecticut, and that's the trend. So whether this will mean that they'll try and moderate and find somebody who would try and stand up for what they call traditional Yankee Republican values rather than what's going on in Washington is yet to be seen. So it's a party in flux right now. That's the way I see the Republican Party of Connecticut.
Ebong, thanks for your insights today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
Ebong Udama is WSHU's senior political reporter, and thank you to Joe Shaw, executive editor of the Southampton Press, for joining us with insights about the GOP on Long Island. Joe, thanks for your time today.
My pleasure, Tom. Thanks, Ebong.
Thank you. Nice to meet you, Joe.
Nice to meet you, too.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll be in touch again soon, I'm sure. Today, we're taking the pulse of the GOP in Connecticut and on Long Island. Joining us now with insights about the Connecticut side is Dr. Jonathan Wharton. He's the Associate Dean at the School of Graduate and Professional Studies at Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven. He teaches political science and urban affairs, and he advises both the College Republicans and College Democrats at SCSU. He was also the chairman of the New Haven Republicans from 2016 to 2018 and elected to the Republican State Central Committee 2018 to 2020. Dean Wharton, welcome to The Full Story.
Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Certainly. You've been privy to the inner workings of the Republican Party in Connecticut for some time now, for several years. Is today's state party the GOP that you joined?
It has, as most parties tend to have been, it's shifted in a variety of different ways. Certainly, there's been a focus or interest in terms of what's gone on with the national races, even prior to President Trump's election. There is certainly a support going in all types of directions from the candidates back then. There still remains some division about Trump to some extent, even within the party in Connecticut. But for the most part, there's a lot of support for him. But I think the bigger issue has really been more, even recently, in terms of the direction where things go between the party chair's race for the state party, as well as the upcoming, say, central committee positions that are coming up as well in May. So there have been a lot of ongoing concerns for the last few months, but really for a while, in the last year especially, for the state party itself.
Could you talk more about that, about the split? I guess, you know, we could say there's a GOP split on the national level. How deeply into Connecticut does that split reach? Does a split in Connecticut reflect the one that we see on a national level, do you think?
No, in fact, it's unique because it stands out more in terms of leadership experience and personality. Because of what happened back with the gubernatorial race, I think it really stems from that. As much as there might be a focus and interest in terms of what's going on with the National Party or even President Trump, it's really more about what happened back in 2018 for the governor's race, I would argue. We cannot forget that there were, you know, some 20 candidates trying to run for governor. And there's nearly half that many for the lieutenant governor's race, just on the Republican side alone. And so some of that division was kind of ongoing, you know, in prior 2018. But I think in some respects, it continues on. And I wonder really what the spillover effect might be for next year's gubernatorial race, but also the upcoming chair's race, too, for the state party.
So with that in mind, what message does the GOP, the Connecticut GOP, have for voters in the state as you look to elect and put new leaders in place?
Well, you know, I can't speak for the State Central Committee since obviously I'm no longer on it. Mm-hmm. And I'm certainly, you know, as I jokingly say to my students and people, I'm retired from being a party chairman in New Haven. But I would offer that what stands out the most for us as a party are concerns related to the state's economy. Even before COVID took place, it's been no secret with Connecticut that we've been on a downward spiral as it relates to economic development concerns, not just in our cities, but even in some of the suburban areas and even rural areas. And we cannot forget how many people have been leaving the state, as well as corporations and businesses. And so along with COVID now and how the economy has, you know, been limited right now, it'll be interesting to see what will happen in the next year or so for some of these statewide races, because we really have to find ways of resolving our economic problems and ongoing concerns related to migration, jobs, and economic development in our local areas. And so for the Republican Party, there's been a greater interest in terms of what to do with the business community, especially in Connecticut, the business climate.
What do you think the party's strategy should be to win? Well, there are a couple of upcoming special elections, or there's one coming up in the House. There was one in the Senate that the GOP did not pick up a while back. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, what do you think the party's strategy should be to win elections in 2022?
I think there's got to be a narrative, a united force, where the party can come together and address some of the internal rancor, but also find pathways of dealing with closing ranks. We need to find and forge a way to come together and recognize that we cannot be divided, because being united is really the most important force for our party. And we need to find a pathway of bringing in a number of these unaffiliated voters. Tom, you know, it's no secret there are so many more people coming from New York, especially, and many of them don't have a party affiliation, and so many of them are unaffiliated voters. And we've seen that number and the uptick increase. And so it's not good for either party, really, Democrat or Republican. So that we have to find a way of speaking to them as well. All these unaffiliated voters who may not be familiar with connected problems and issues, many of them are outside of the state, and they need to recognize some of the ongoing issues going on with the state.
This month, you wrote an op-ed, speaking of unaffiliated voters, for Connecticut News Junkie, which, for those who don't know, is an online news site. And in that op-ed, you addressed the fact that more than 5,000 Connecticut voters had left the Republican Party since the attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. And you point out also that those voters, they're not going to the Democratic Party, by and large. Right. They're remaining unaffiliated. Why is that?
It's easily almost two-thirds of them are. I think that, and just speaking in terms of really more anecdotal evidence, if you will, because I hear this so often from my students, younger people especially, there's a frustration with both parties, you know, and in that they are not really addressing the greater concerns of how it's affecting them, a lot of the issues and problems that are ongoing in the state, but even locally. Part of the problem, I would argue, is more institutionally. Within our Republican and Democratic town committee, they're so localized, so provincial, and so personal. Sometimes they're not speaking to many of the younger voters or unaffiliated voters or many of the transplants that are coming in. And because we are based on a system and a model where it's not so much regionalized, but it's more based on home rule and our parties reflect that with these local committees, you know, it becomes very divided and problematic for somebody who's new to town. And how do you reach out to those voters who are unaffiliated, who are out of state, who are younger, where they have a disinterest really with either party? So for many of them, they become unaffiliated voters, unfortunately.
So that's a challenge to both parties, both major parties, then to get the message out that will attract those unaffiliated voters. But also, is the time ripe then for a third party to gain new voters, some of these unaffiliated people?
You know, Tom, I've been tempted to even consider writing a piece as a follow-up to that.
I'd be interested in reading that.
Yeah, and I've been on the fence whether, in fact, I want to go down that road. You know, it's a difficult one to really address. I will say that in some locales in Connecticut, like certainly Hartford, they have some local charters where they allow a minority party to have a representation on their council or in some commissions and boards, for example. And so you see a third party like the Working Family Party coming to power. And there's been concerns about this even in Hamden, nearby here in New Haven, where we're seeing the rise certainly of the Working Family Party as well. And so this is interesting in terms of third party dynamics. Could this be the moment? I think a third party could have a moment at any time. The thing is that they have more of a lever, more of an interest locally, but sometimes not so much in terms of statewide positions. That's where they're limited in many respects. If they can find a pathway of taking an opportunity right now where we're seeing slowly the number of unaffiliated voters on the increase, absolutely. But they also need to gather connections. They need to develop a base and a network where it's sustainable, not just in terms of politics, but certainly in terms of fundraising. And so that has to come through.
Thinking for a moment about the message that the Republican Party, at least some members of it on the national level, are sending out, that appears to be narrowing the type of voter that the party wants to count among its members. Some members used a pretty aggressive rhetoric about the Black Lives Matter protests, women, immigration, other issues. Can the GOP attract a diverse spectrum of voters on the local level when the national message seems to perhaps counter that effort?
You know, it really depends where, Tom. I think you have some places where you see a greater representation of minorities, for example, and even women in some locales and others. And so often it's the state party or the local party that they're more interested in than the national. And I would counter that I tend to be one of those people. You know, for me, the national party, I've not had as much of a focus or an interest really in decades. And so I'm not the only one. I know the other Republicans of color and, you know, God knows, I certainly know a lot of younger voters who feel in similar ways that they'd rather make an impact at the local level and find a way addressing local issues and local problems because they see concerns on the horizon or it's been an ongoing issue related to increases on taxes, for example, or livability concerns in Connecticut. or we're not seeing a healthy state economy, and we haven't for really years. So I would contend that, yeah, certainly it's easy to point fingers at, you know, the party is this way or that way, especially as it relates to gender and minority recruitment. I'm not denying that we don't have an issue or problem with that. We do have to find pathways of speaking towards that. But I think you'd be surprised that locally in some of our Republican town committees, it's interesting to see the diversity. In New Haven, I actually experienced that firsthand. Some of the candidates who sometimes came, especially for the 2018 race, were taken back how many younger people we had and how many minorities we had on our town committee. I oftentimes remind people it does exist. You just have to find it.
Well, what attracted you originally to the GOP? Was it what was happening nationally at the time? Was it a local emphasis that brought you to the party?
Well, you know, I grew up in West Hartford in the 90s, especially. And during that era, you know, it was in many ways a divided town, right? It was almost like a third, and a third for each party or unaffiliated voters. Of course, now it's not nearly as much anymore. But back then, at least, there was more of a positive approach of dealing with local and even state issues back then in the late 80s and certainly 90s. But a part of it, really a bigger part of it, is more generationally. You know, I am a fourth generation Republican on my mother's side of the family. We trace it back to Reconstruction on my mother's side of the family. So is that a lineage more than anything else? Look, I tell my students freely, and certainly the State Central Committee, when I was on there, they knew it very well, that I'm a split ticket voter. You know, I have been proud of that. I vote more for the candidate than I do for the party. Now, there's some Republican officials who don't like that I put that out there, but it's been no secret that I vote for the candidate and not always the party. I think it's easy for us to remain in divided camps and places as opposed to really having an understanding of the issues and who the candidates we are actually supporting and voting for. So for me, it's a personal decision to go in that direction. And I have to admit, you know, I work for both sides of the aisle as a congressional aide as well for both Republican and Democrats. And so, of course, that was a different era in the 90s when I was able to do it as opposed to now in this very hyper-partisan era.
I would imagine that'd be difficult today.
Impossible.
Dean Wharton, thank you so much for your time today and your insights, and we hope to be able to check in with you in the future as the party evolves.
Thank you. Thanks for including me. I appreciate it.
Dr. Jonathan Wharton is the Associate Dean at the School of Graduate and Professional Studies at Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven. Joining me now are two guests with inside perspectives of the Republican Party, one in Connecticut and one in New York. Dr. Gary Rose is a professor and chair of the Department of Government, Politics, and Global Studies at Sacred Heart University in Connecticut. He joins us on the phone. Professor Rose, welcome back to The Full Story.
Hey, glad to be here, Tom. How are you?
Pretty well, thank you. And from New York, Republican State Senator Phil Boyle is with us. He represents the 4th State Senate District on Long Island. He is also the dean of the GOP Long Island contingent. Senator Boyle, thank you for joining us.
Good to be here, Tom.
Professor Rose, if we could start with you. You wrote a book about the 2016 presidential election called Haywire. Did your research and analysis for that book give you any clues as to where the Republican Party was headed by the time the 2020 election rolled around?
Actually, no. Based on 2016, it was, of course, a very controversial election. But at the same time, it was a divisive election. But I did not anticipate what was to come with the Trump presidency, which would lend itself to a good deal of, unfortunately for the Republican Party here in Connecticut, some real misgivings, particularly during the last several months of the Trump presidency. So I certainly did not, see that coming. That's not to say that I was under the impression that the election of 2016 was going to result in a surge of support for the Republicans, but I certainly didn't anticipate the condition that the party is in now as a result of this last contest.
How would you compare the local Connecticut GOP to the national party right now?
Yeah. Well, you know, we do know based on some recent reports that, several thousand people actually have left the Republican Party in Connecticut or or perhaps are intending to leave. You know, don't quote me exactly on that figure, but there is enough evidence out there to suggest that there has been somewhat of an exodus of people. Now, you mentioned the local GOP here in Connecticut. It actually, that's where, if there is an area of strength and viability, it is among the town councils. We have, 169 towns in Connecticut, and it is there where we actually find the Republican Party doing quite well. They're not doing well in state politics and certainly not in federal politics here in Connecticut. But at the same time, at the local level, we have some very interesting Republican mayors too, and so it's there where we find at the real base of the party, where the Republican Party still is pretty viable. Although I will say this, Tom, that based on some recent research I just did here, based on town councils, I was surprised to see that some of the Republican strongholds in the rural parts of Connecticut, which is where the Republican Party has historically done very well, even there, some of the town councils have shared governments and divided governments between Democrats and Republicans. And so the Democrats are actually making some inroads there, too.
Is there a problem with messaging, perhaps, from the Connecticut GOP, especially when we talk about state-level elections and state-level positions? What message do you think it should send?
Yeah. Well, one of the problems is that there is no message. Right now, the Republican Party is not really a party with a clear point of view. You know, at one time, the Republican Party did stand for certain very clear values in terms of spending and sizes of government and, limited government and so forth. But lately in Connecticut, it is a party that is floundering, and so there really is, when people think of the Republican Party today, they think of a party that really is trying to identify itself again and figure out what it really represents. And for some, too, they see the party as the party of Donald Trump. Now, that appeals to certain, some populist Republicans here in Connecticut. Yet at the same time, we do have a long tradition of pretty moderate Republicans, and those are that does not seem to be a selling message for those individuals. Probably those are some of the people that have left the party, actually. So it's not so much that the message is wrong, it's that there is no message. The Democrats do have a message, which seems to be resonating in a state that is increasingly becoming more progressive and bluer as we go. In fact, by the hour at times, it seems like. But the Republican Party, in fact, we don't really have a state leader. We don't really have any type of principal figure who is articulating the views of that party. So it's a party that is right now, I think, undergoing a serious identity problem here in Connecticut.
New York State Senator Phil Boyle, if I could ask you a similar question. Suffolk County seems, in comparison, to have a fairly strong Republican organization. What message does the GOP in Suffolk County need to craft to attract more voters in the 2022 election, would you say?
Well, Tom, one of the things we're fortunate about, as I say, as a Republican, is that the Democratic Party here on Long Island and throughout New York State and perhaps throughout the country is going so far to the left whether we have a big tent Republican Party, shall we say, we have some extremely conservative people, we have some moderate people, we have some in between, but overall, they're opposed to the far left agenda that we see. For example, last year, during the even number state election years and the presidential, obviously, the New York State legislature, controlled completely by the Democratic Party, passed bail reform. They called it bail reform, and it was basically letting criminals out of jail with no bail, and they were going on to do more crimes. The one guy, he robbed, I believe, 6 banks in a period of a month and a half, and he was let go each time. So as it's easy for the Republicans to craft ourselves as the law and order party, and it's not even really hardcore law and order, it's just average thinking. So we had a tremendous amount of people come, on all sides of the political spectrum, come and vote for us. We had a very good year last year here in Suffolk County. Obviously, the president, President Trump, was a controversial figure, and that may have cost us some seats in the legislature. But overall, I think that the fiscally conservative law and order message of the Republicans is playing well here, at least on Long Island.
Senator, you've described yourself as a, I believe, as a moderate center right in beliefs and philosophy in terms of your Republican position. And moderate may not be how some would describe the current Republican Party on a national level. I'm wondering, what does it mean to be a moderate Republican right now? And is there room in the GOP to be a moderate on Long Island?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and when I say, when I describe myself as a moderate center right, I am fiscally very conservative. Our state budget is now going to be over $200 billion a year. When I started out, one political lifetime ago, I think it was $39 billion my first year in office, and this is my 24th, and it's over $200 billion. So we have a real spending problem from the far left and the Democrats in this state. Law and order, I'm definitely in favor of, you could say, throw the book at them type. But also on the moderate side, environment. Anybody who's a representative, and probably in Connecticut and certainly here on Long Island, in any party, has to be concerned about the environment. We're surrounded by water, obviously, and we have a sole source aquifer that supplies our drinking water. So we're always concerned about environmental issues. So not hard right on every issue, but the fiscal and law and order, definitely.
When we talk about Long Island voters, generally speaking, Republicans, of course, as well as Democrats, are voters more honed in on local issues, things that are very important to them on a very local level, more than what's happening nationally? Does that determine more often which way someone will vote?
I think, Tom, a lot of it is taxes here on Long Island, and you can say that's a local issue, but also a national issue. We have obviously among the highest taxes in the country living here on Long Island, real property taxes, income taxes, with possible exception of where the good doctor is from in Connecticut. But that is the overarching most important issue for a lot of people. Now, obviously, with the increase of the internet and Fox News versus CNN or any other media, there's going to be national issues that people discuss. But the bread and butter things are the taxes and quality of life issues, both here on Long Island and around the state.
Professor Rose, you mentioned before the number of voters who have left the Republican Party since the attack on the U.S. Capitol in January. I think more than 5,000 was that number. I understand that many of them actually are identifying as independents. They're not necessarily switching over to the Democratic Party. They're remaining apart from both of the major parties. Do you think that there is a message that and we talked about messages before, there's a message that the Connecticut GOP can put out there that will win back some of those voters, since clearly they didn't want to move to the Democratic side?
Right. Yeah, they're not willing to go all the way. it's gonna be difficult, however. And once again, to get back to what I was saying, they really have to have a message that is very appealing, to these people that have now decided to step away from their longstanding party affiliation. But that said, I would say that if there is a message, certainly it's one that's probably going to that could possibly appeal. It would come probably after the COVID crisis has subsided. And right now, of course, the Democrats are in charge of that in Connecticut, and Ned Lamont has got very high approval ratings, as I'm sure you know. So it's going to be very difficult for them to do much in terms of winning those people back as this crisis is being resolved. But once this crisis tends to subside, then I think we're going to be looking at a deficit here in Connecticut that is going to be upwards of $2.5 billion. Most likely, taxes, there's a good chance that taxes are going to rise. We have a real problem with pensions for public employees here. Unfunded liabilities are an issue. We have a serious problem in transportation. So actually, there really are a range of issues that Republicans can get back to. And I think right now that, you know, obviously health care is the key issue, and the Democrats are in the driver's seat on that. But I would suspect, Tom, that as that major issue, which has been looming over this state and the country for a year now, as it recedes, then I think that the Republican Party, you know, assuming they have someone who can speak for the party, of course, and assuming there are people that will be willing to step forward as spokespersons for the party, at that point, I think the Republicans can get back to some of those very important fiscal issues and managerial issues that in the past have resulted in them winning, you know, the governorship and so forth. And so I wouldn't say that it's a lost cause. It's going to be a challenge, but I think post-COVID-19, I think there are definitely some opportunities for the Republican Party to regain their to regain some of those supporters that they lost.
So you don't think the growing number of independent voters is necessarily a rejection of the two-party system?
Not completely. No. No, I don't think it is. It's not a rejection of the two-party system. And, you know, there's an awful lot of confusion about who independent voters are anyway. You know, a lot of these people who have become independents could probably still lean towards the Republican Party. There are a lot of independents who lean Democrat. And when you really, you know, independents, actually, it's below 20%. Of independents are actually purely independent. So, you know, the independent column is still, I think, an opportunity for the Republican Party. I think they can win some of those people back. And for the general elections, I think they can still tap into, you know, the independents and actually do quite well. I mean, when you look at how we've elected Republican governors in the state, and in the last election, Bob Stefanowski did exceptionally well. He not only was able to do well among Republicans, but also did quite well among unaffiliated voters here in Connecticut, too. So proper messaging, as I say, is key. But right now, I don't see any signs of that happening. But I think it is definitely something that can be developed. But there's a challenge there. There's no question about it.
Senator Boyle, same question to you. There are a fair number of unaffiliated voters in Suffolk County. Do you see any indication that they're leaning away from a two-party system, just having had it with both the Democrats and the Republicans?
Yeah, Tom, I would respectfully disagree with Dr. Rose on this one. I think it is something of a rejection of both parties, because we see the parties nominating people further to the left and right, depending on Democrat, Republican. And I think they're looking for people that can capture the middle. More and more frequently in New York State, for example, we have either solid blue districts, shall we say, in the city, New York City, and other urban areas. In the rural areas of upstate New York, a lot of red districts, and perhaps on Long Island in the suburbs is purple. And so if the Republicans nominate a far right winger, or the Democrats nominate a leftist Democratic Socialist, a lot of the moderate voters there who say, look, I was a Democrat all my life, but this person's too far left, or I would have been Republican all my life and this person's too far right, I'm going to not unregister. We call them blanks in New York, unregistered voters. I'm going to unregister with the party. I'm going to become a blank. And I'm just going to vote for the person I like, depending on their positions, whether at a local level or national level, could be an individual choice. But I think that it could be the chance of an opportunity for the rise of a third party. You know, we've had them in the state with varying successes, but I think there's an big open space in the middle, and it's getting more open every day.
State Senator Phil Boyle of Long Island, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate your insights.
Thank you, Tom.
Dr. Gary Rose, professor and chair in the Department of Government Politics, Global Studies at Sacred Heart University in Connecticut, thank you for your insights, and we hope to talk with you again, too.
Sure. Thank you, Tom.
What do you think? Is there a difference between the local and national GOP? Let us know. You can email us at tfs@wshu.org, and we're on Twitter at @FullStoryWSHU. And that's our program for today, produced by Fatou Sangare and senior producer Ann Lopez. I'm Tom Kuser. Thank you for listening to The Full Story.